Okay. I'm going to talk about the energy spectra, small-scale dynamos. And in particular, what we're going to see if you have large Reynolds numbers. This is a work done in collaboration with Axel Brandenburg. We are in particular interested in trying to find any possible power laws in energy spectra. Till now that has not been seen, so that's really what we are looking for. So basically what we take a box like the one in the background here, cubic box, and everything is non-dimensional and stuff. And we put in some, as an initial condition, we put in a gas, perfectly ionized, and zero velocity. And we add a seed magnetic field that is perfectly random and very, very weak, very small scale stuff. And then we start putting in kinetic energy at large scales. This will get the dynamo growing, and the magnetic field will grow exponentially till we reach the nonlinear regime. And then in that saturated state, that is where we are looking for the energy spectra. So for these simulations, we have used the pencil code, which, if you're interested, you can find more about in this page here. You can also download it. It's grid-based, sixth-order finite difference in space, third-order Runge-Kutta in time, and it's a compressible code. As I said, we put on the kinetic energy on large scales, and you actually put it in between wave number 1 and 2, where wave number 1 is the same as the box size of the box. So this is very large scale. The forcing is isotropic, and it's non-helical. We use periodic boundary conditions, and no impulse field. The magnetic Prandtl number is unity, and we have an isothermal equational state. So basically what we do the minimal thing, simplify everything as much as possible, in order to be able to maybe understand what is really going on. Really simplified. And the motivation for doing this is, we want to understand how the small-scale dynamo works. Still an unresolved problem. But also there might be some application for it. Say in the intersolar medium, we have below some certain scale, where we don't feel any rotation and stuff. Also in the hot intergalactic gas, galactic clusters. The problem there is that the mean free part is rather large, so actually the MHD approximations start breaking down. But also maybe in the sun. Okay, so the equation we solve, the momentum equation, of course, so isothermal, weakly compressible. We choose the forcing function to be so strong that the saturated velocity has a RMS value that is between 0.1 and 0.2 of the sound speed CS. So it's weakly compressible. And the induction equation is solved with respect to the vector potential and not with respect to the magnetic field. The reason we do that is to ensure that the divergence of B is always zero. And of course the continuity equation as it normally is. Right. So first of all, I just wanted to show to you what is important, that our forcing is non-helical. If you see here, with the non-helical forcing, that is not working. Hopefully you see it now. Yeah, I do. See here, you don't really get any very large scale stuff going on. This is the X component or the B field. And this is in the kinematic regime. If you do the same thing but with helical forcing, like this, you see that pretty soon we see a very large scale structure showing up here. So it's very crucial that this is non-helical. Otherwise the energy spectrum would be totally different. Another thing I want to show is this thing here. We have, this is now in the saturated regime, And we show the magnetic field vectors here, but only those that are stronger than 3 times BRMS. And as you see here, we have rather large structures for the magnetic field, almost on the size of the box, even though this is no mean field dynamo or nothing. And see as this evolves, I want you to note that the whole thing is intermittent in space, but also, equally important, it's very intermittent in time. So you still see that there are a lot of large structures here, but in a little time, you will see that these structures kind of go away. Everything become very small scale. See now? Start to see that everything is just more homogeneous and a small scale. And then after a while, again, it starts growing. So when you want to do like we are doing, to find some statistical properties of these things, it's very important that you average over pretty long times. These now run for in order of 10 large-scale turnover times. Okay, right. So then start looking at the MHD spectra. First, we did so this is all Kolmogorov compensated, both in the Y and X direction. And solid line is kinetic energy. Magnetic energy is dashed line. This is for a 256 cube thing. And you see here, this might be something like a Kolmogorov thing, but it's slightly steeper and stuff. So we increase resolution. And we get to a 512 cube run. And we see, wow, now we start to see maybe some Kolmogorov-like stuff here. We kind of encourage. Maybe see something like that up here as well. So then we go on. Try even larger resolution. And yeah, well, maybe it'll have some Kolmogorov-like things here. But if we zoom in now on this area here, like so, we see that it is actually shallower than Kolmogorov. It might be that it is maybe the Roeschlinger Cragedon k to the minus 3/2 or something. But that is kind of, yeah, we don't like that so much. So we really want to see larger Reynolds numbers here. The problem then is, of course, how should you do that? This is 1024 cube. We can't really afford to run any larger than that. But what we know is that, you see, in the area from around here and all the way here, that's actually more than a decade. It's just lost in dissipation. So if you try to do something to make this dissipation area shorter, that might do the trick. So what we do, we write the viscosity in a more general form. Where instead of putting a 2 there, we put an N plus these compressional terms, but they're not important since this is cerebrically compressible. Then the ordinary method that we had used previously, N equals 2, nu equals constant. We saw we didn't reach large enough Reynolds number with that one. So instead, we might use hyperviscosity. Set N equals 6 instead. Still nu equals constant. Or, an alternative, might use some Smagorinsky-like way. Larger dissimulation somehow. And then N equals again 2. But viscosity is variable. So it's a Smagorinsky viscosity, where C smag is the Smagorinsky coefficient. And L is the filter. S is here a strain tensor. Right. So then we want to check out these methods, if these methods are okay to use. And as a benchmark for that, we start by looking at the pure hydrodynamical energy spectrum. And as a benchmark, we use the Kaneda 4096 cube simulation done on the Earth simulator. Which looks something like this. And then we start by overplotting our hyperviscous run. And we see that up here on large and intermediate scales, it really is pretty good. This was actually very surprising to us. So that our hyper thing would totally screw up all scales. But apparently it only screws up the bottleneck here. And furthermore, the bottleneck is equal in width. As it should be. it's only the magnitude that is increased. So actually the hyperviscosity only affects the bottleneck and the dissipative range. That was very surprising. Then we also tried with the Smagorinsky method in the same way. We see we get the same results. Very much consistent here. But now it's even consistent in the bottleneck. That was kind of cool. And so actually this Smagorinsky seems to be better than the hyperviscous thing. So it seems to be okay, more or less, in the hydro simulations. Then we start looking at how it is in the MHD. And then, as a benchmark, in that case, we use our 1024 cube simulation that I already presented with normal viscosity. That is used as a benchmark. And as a first test, we use hyperviscosity with only 128 cube grid points. And you see, it fits very well. The magnetic field here is very good. Kinetic also, at least consistent here. And then we get this very sharp cutoff. So you see that with only 128 cube resolution, we can do the same large and intermediate range as with a 1024 cubed ordinary run. So that saves us for a whole lot of computer time. And the same is Smagorinsky. Very much the same thing. Very encouraging, really. Okay, so then we go to the whole point. We want to have as large Reynolds number as possible. So here is the 128 cube again, Smagorinsky and hyperviscosity. You remember this was just like the 1024 cubed MHD, ordinary viscosity run. Doing 256 cube. And we see that now we start to see some, might be a power law up here, we think. And also here, same thing. Funny slope, but still it might be a power law. Increase resolution once again. But now we see that this power law changed slope. At least a little bit. But it's now very long, it's almost a decade long, really. And now for the magnetic field, we see that it might actually be consistent with Kolmogorov. Might. Still a little bit hard to tell. And then we would, of course, like to do even larger simulations of this one, but then, unluckily, we run out of CPU hours.
This nonlinear regime you showed?
Yeah. Everything was nonlinear. So, the results. What do we actually get from this? This is our largest Reynolds number. We see that we don't really actually see an inertial range here, because then we would suppose magnetic and kinetic energy spectra to be parallel, since it should be independent of scale and stuff. But we don't really see that. So then we start so this is actually what we know. See here, part of the magnetic field. The magnetic energy spectrum, just like here, and the kinetic in the same way. But then we say that, okay, it seems like these guys are gonna come together here somehow. So it seems like doing a guess like this is not gonna be too bad, maybe. Hopefully not. And then we start thinking, you probably know Goldreich Schreder and their ideas. And from what they come up with, they say that if we have a large-scale imposed magnetic field, we will have equipartition between magnetic and kinetic energy spectra. So, over here, we have actually a large-scale magnetic field. At least the stuff down here, which is very small-scale and have very short time scales, will feel these guys up here as large-scale and more or less permanent. Therefore, our conjecture is that here we will actually have more or less something like the Goldreich-Schreder energy spectrum. K to the minus 5/3 and equipartition magnetic and kinetic energy. Then at the end, we have the dissipative cell range. And here we might or we might not have a bottleneck. We have done some simulations with imposed fields, which seem to indicate that we do not see a bottleneck in that area. But you know from the hydro, pure hydro simulations, that we do have bottlenecks. So this is still an open question. Right. And I think I'm actually going to just going to conclude showing this picture here. Yeah. Thank you.
When we see the pictures, actual field, it looks like cigars or spaghetti, very anisotropic. And you force it to sort of average and wait long time to make this classical Kolmogorov spectra. And it worries me. Why should you do it instead of maybe you have to look at instant spectra and study?
Yeah, right. So what
2D at least or 3D K, and it may be more informative if you insist on study spectra, like Fausta did not. And in some sense, I agree, there are other characteristics. So can you explain why you force yourself to this?
Yeah, first of all, as I understood Fausta, it was because it didn't see really any spectra because the kinetic energy was so small scale and stuff. So what we actually do is we look at the instantaneous thing and find the energy spectra at each snapshot. So that is very instantaneous. But then we average the energy spectra again.
But what does it look like, this anisotropic spectra?
It looks pretty much like this, really, what we see up there. It's not much of a difference. The slopes might vary a little bit with time, but it's basically the same thing. It is indeed, yeah.
But what will be if you take, say, different components of this, of magnetic field, for example?
You mean, say, the X component or something?
X component and to compare, say, with Y component.
Yeah, they are the same. Exactly the same.
It's the same, but some maybe phase shift systematic between these components. Some kind of rotation of energy.
Yeah, I don't really know what would be there. Might be something to look into.
Maybe it's real for real.
Yeah. Yeah, I should maybe try that, yeah.
You produce instantaneously some very long structures, and average is similar to some kind of sphere.
Yeah, I think it's a real, yeah.
I wanted to ask, did you use the Sames-Magnitsky model for the magnetic diffusivity?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I forgot to tell you. No, for the Magnitsky, we use still a sixth-order hyper in magnetic, for the magnetic field. We just haven't implemented the Magnitsky for the magnetic yet.
At least in the geodynamo community, I know there's some argument as to whether hyperviscosity is a good idea for dynamo. Does it do anything?
Yeah. If you have velocity, it is definitely not a good idea, because that screws up the whole time scales. I mean, the saturation time scale is screwed up by the hyperviscosity. But if you do not have velocity, it actually appears to be okay. But so I guess in the geodynamo, it's definitely not okay.
And did you commute magnetic helicity spectra for this? Did you get a similar... it's completely non-helical, right?
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it would be also interesting to do, but if you want to do a helical simulation, you have to have all this scale separation between the forcing scale and the box scale, and therefore we lose a lot of resolution somehow. Yeah.
Thank you, Neil, again.